Good morning and welcome to Focus. I'm Craig Cohen. Public policy discussions about education tend to focus on failing schools, dropout rates. In other words, those schools and by extension students who are struggling. But what about those students who are not struggling, but simply seek stronger academic engagement? According to a recent report released by the progressive public policy research and advocacy organization, the Center for American Progress, student surveys conducted over the last 3 years by the Department of Education's National Assessment of Education Progress indicate school may, in fact, be too easy for a lot of students. Among the findings, 37% of fourth graders say their math work is often or always too easy. 57% of eighth graders say their history work is often or always too easy. 39% of 12th graders say they rarely write about what they read in class. Today on Focus, we consider whether after years of aggressive efforts to push for more standardized testing in public schools, shifting resources from public education to private schools, charter schools, and other measures designed to improve the educational experience, we have perhaps created an environment of weaker engagement and of teaching to the test that has resulted in some students simply not being challenged. We'll discuss whether student perceptions of their educational experience match those of teachers and parents, and we'll welcome your questions and comments as well for two guests. Ulrich Boser is a senior fellow from the Center for American Progress and a co-author of the report. Ulrich, welcome to Focus.
Thanks so much for having me.
Glad to have you with us. And Dr. Christopher Cook is Illinois State Superintendent of Education. Dr. Cook, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thank you.
As we begin our conversation, we welcome you to it as well at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. That's 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. You can also email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. Ulrich, let me begin with you. And as I mentioned, your report is based on a series of student surveys conducted over the last 3 years. Can you provide some details about the surveys themselves and what specifically students were asked?
Sure. I mean, you might think that the nation's teenagers are drowning in schoolwork, that they are overworked and underplayed, and that might be true in Winnetka or New Trier or in Beverly Hills, California. A few well-heeled students might, in fact, be working too hard, might have too much homework. But when we examine this federal survey, it's from a background questionnaire that's part of a national assessment, we found the opposite, that many students are simply not being challenged. And we were able to examine the data at the state level. So in Illinois, we found that 23% of eighth graders report that they read less than 5 pages a day, either in school or at home. And in a competitive global economy where the mastery of science is increasingly crucial, 74% of eighth grade students say that they aren't being taught engineering and technology. So the survey had a mix of questions, some behavioral, looking at what students did, and then some about simply their opinion, whether or not schoolwork was often or always too easy.
Superintendent Cook, are findings from student surveys like this good indicators of the state of education in America?
Well, I think it's another source of data we need to pay attention to. And, you know, in Illinois, we're going to be implementing a climate survey next year, which will include student perspectives as well as teachers and parents. And certainly students are going to tell you in our reality check on teaching and instruction. And, you know, as a teacher, I was aware when I didn't know my subject well enough, the kids would be the first ones to tell you. So I think it is important to use it as a source of information in addition to many others.
Well, Rick, I imagine you agree, and that's sort of the point of issuing the report in the first place?
I agree. I think parents know this intuitively. That's why parents ask their students often, what did you do today in school? Where, you know, what kind of classes and materials did you have? What learning happened? And increasingly we see that these surveys can provide important insights into a teacher's effectiveness. Illinois, along with a number of states, is trying to figure out better ways to evaluate teachers, to give teachers feedback on how they're doing in the classroom, as well as to hold teachers accountable. So we think that these types of surveys for young students as well as for older students could be one more indicator, could help provide us a better insight into what happens in the classroom.
Dr. Cook, when it comes to feedback and accountability, the strongest indicator, the one that people seem to keep turning to, is standardized testing, test scores. If scores go up, schools must be doing better. If scores go down, schools must be doing worse. Is that maybe just an oversimplification?
No, I think that's largely how they're used in an accountability system. And again, you know, standardized tests are a reality check, and how you compare with others like this student in other states, sometimes internationally. I mean, we even give the PISA exam here in Illinois and NAEP. So there's different measures here and assessments of standardized tests that are a reality check on how we're doing and how our kids are going to be doing, because they indeed are going to be competing in a global economy when they leave school. So we pay a lot of attention even to how other nations are performing, you know, in comparison to Illinois and the United States.
So testing, rankings, student surveys, are there other factors that you like to take into account?
Well, I think, you know, as the climate survey I mentioned earlier would do, we're listening to the folks who are actually working more closely with the students. The most important assessments are the ones that are guiding instruction, that teachers are using to recalibrate their instruction to make sure you've got adequate baseline information of how kids are performing and that you're adequately assessing them on a periodic basis so you know they're improving. And we will never see that necessarily at the state or in an aggregated manner, but it's very important to instruction.
Ulrich, last year the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation presented results from their Measures of Effective Teaching project. Mm-hmm. What did they find were the best ways to evaluate teacher performance?
That study is ongoing, but some of the promising practices that we've seen are these student surveys. And I want to be clear that these student surveys have been around for a long time. They were first administered in, I think it was 1896 in Iowa. But the surveys that are given now are very, very detailed. Students talk about the challenge that they experience in a classroom. They talk about how much teachers captivate them and engage their imagination. These are very, very detailed surveys, and these are one indicator that the researchers have found to be promising. They see the test scores themselves also as a small part can be used to evaluate a teacher's performance, as well as classroom observations. Trained evaluators, whether it's a principal or an outside person, going into a classroom and really spending some time and watching a teacher. And it's very important that these systems aren't just about identifying the worst teachers or the best teachers, but about giving teachers support. We don't need a gotcha education system. We need a system that helps all educators improve and keeps an eye on what matters, and that is students' performance.
All right. So with that in mind, Dr. Cook, what is your reaction then to these fairly high percentages of students in different grade levels saying they are not being challenged enough in class?
Well, I'm not terribly surprised. I mean, my background was in special education, and I worked a lot with kids who were not necessarily held to high expectations. And we've done a lot in this state to raise expectations. We've raised, you know, the cut scores for our test of teachers. We're looking to raise the cut score for our elementary test. And we're constantly revising what we're doing. And keep in mind, the entire notion of assessments and how we're assessing learning is changing. We're getting away and going to be moving away from multiple choice answer tests to students being asked to apply knowledge and teachers being asked to teach in that respect.
So, is it harder when you do make that kind of transition to effectively evaluate that student performance? Because now, instead of a raw aggregate score based off of responses to A, B, C, or D, now you're talking about evaluating the way they interpret data and language and word usage and such.
It is, certainly. And, you know, that's why the federal government has paid now for two assessments aligned to the Common Core Standards, for example. And we're part of one of those, you know, packages. And we want to make sure that it's much more expensive, first of all. We want to make sure that students, when they're applying knowledge, think of the scoring of a writing sample. It requires a human being right now to sit down and read that and interpret what a student knows and to somehow, using a rubric or some other means, make an evaluative determination of the quality of that work.
This is Focus. I'm Craig Cohen, and my guests are Dr. Christopher Cook, Illinois State Superintendent of Education, and Ulrich Boser, Senior Fellow with the Center for American Progress and co-author of a report which suggests for some students, school may be too easy. We're discussing that report, the surveys at the heart of it, and its potential implications for education in Illinois and across the country. We welcome you to the conversation. You can join us on air by calling 333-9455 or 800-222-9455, or you can email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. The phone number again is 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. And we do have an email already from Michael in Champaign, who makes the point. He says, when you have 10% of the class being labeled valedictorian, something is very wrong. What's your reaction to that, Dr. Cook?
You know, I would be concerned. We've had, you know, when we were going over our ACT scores, and this wasn't a school in Illinois, but there was a high school where half of their kids were valedictorians. Certainly that's an indication something's wrong. And you have to think there, you know, how meaningful is a grade? Really, we should be moving away from Carnegie units and artificial determinations and moving towards standards-based, when students meet standards. We are increasing students' participation in this state in advanced placement courses. We're offering more advanced placement courses. There is an appetite for those. Every year we offer more and more kids take them. And certain districts in this state haven't had access to those kinds of courses in the past. There's, without question, spotty performance as a result of that.
Well, you mentioned grades, and I recall in school everyone had, it seemed, a fairly uniform grade point average system. You got an A, you got a 4, a B was a 3, a C was a 2, a D was a 1, and an F was a 0. And so you had a 4-point system. There are a lot of students today who come out of high school with a 4.3 GPA and a 4-point system. Doesn't that make it even more difficult to evaluate exactly how effective the process has been of educating that student and other students in comparison?
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the reasons there's such an appetite for standardized tests as well, because it brings in the honesty factor component to what are these kids really knowing, are they able to do when they leave? And, you know, that's an important question to be asking. Anytime you're using grading, you know, there's some subjectivity that goes into that, and you can talk to a number of administrators and teachers who have sat down with parents who have argued about the grades that their students are getting. It's not a pleasant process. So, you know, that can also erode then the honesty of the grading system and how effective that is in actually determining performance.
Or can we compare anything from these student surveys? Can we take any data from that that reflects in any way concerns about grade inflation and whether students are basically at times being handed A's or grades above A that maybe don't really reflect what they've learned?
I think we see grade inflation across the United States. And you mentioned these students who are graduating with 4.3 GPAs. But what we see is that many students are not prepared for college. Right now, about a third of students who enter into college need remedial math. They need remedial English. Now, even Ivy League schools like Dartmouth College are offering remedial courses for their students to get them up to the basics. And that's really repeating material that they should have learned in high school, if not in middle school, you know, how to write logically, how to do sophisticated math. And so we need to keep an eye on what's happening. And I think often we're distracted by these conversations that, you know, students are, you know, overworked and they're on the cover of Newsweek or Time magazine, this fight to get in off the wait list to these top-notch colleges, when we think about the broad swath of students are not being challenged, not being offered those important opportunities to learn what they need to know and be able to do to be prepared for college or to be prepared to leave high school to go into a meaningful career.
Well, it sounds like, Dr. Cook, maybe there are two conversations taking place either among parents and teachers and communities, as well as within the media. The conversations being one being what Ulrich just described, but the other one being, is there so much of an effort in terms of things like standardized testing to lift up those that are struggling that it's at the detriment of those that are maybe more successful academically?
Yeah, I mean, any classroom teacher will tell you, you know, it's always hard to challenge the higher performing students and work with such a range. So we now have to prepare teachers who are prepared to work in that environment, to work with any multiple levels. When I was teaching high school, many of my kids were not reading at grade level. So as a high school teacher, I wouldn't traditionally be trained to teach reading, but it was an essential skill I needed to do that job well because my kids simply weren't there. So it has a lot of implications for your workforce, and certainly we haven't caught up to that yet in this country.
Is it that with each grade level, a teacher has not only whatever curriculum they have to teach, but they need to ensure that everything in every previous grade level occurred the way it was supposed to, that the student has managed to find his or her way up to that next level appropriately?
Yeah, certainly, you know, that's partly what's going to be. If a student comes in your classroom, you're going to teach them, and any good teacher will. They're going to assess what they know, what their performance levels are, and they're going to take them to a higher level. But if they're coming in unprepared, it's really hard to make up so many gains so quickly without a lot of time and effort on behalf of those students.
Ulrich, I wonder if this gets into some another phrase you used in your report, the notion that many students are not engaged in rigorous learning activities. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, I think we see a lot of students being assigned busy work, just filling out worksheets and so forth. And what matters is not just simply the time spent, but the degree that students are really captured in the material, that the degree that they're really engaged in high-level practices, critical thinking as one, creativity. And, we see that in this new generation of tests that are coming on board, that they're not just simply multiple-choice questions, but they're asking students to apply their knowledge. And I think for a long time we allowed teachers to operate in the sort of behind closed doors, and we didn't really know what happened within the classrooms. They were this black box. These surveys are a way to figure out what's happening within those black boxes, and then broader than that, give teachers the tools, the training that they need to teach students from all sorts of backgrounds. Teaching is hard work. Teachers care a lot about their craft, but we need to do more to allow them to focus on, Johnny, who might be struggling a little bit, and make sure that he's maybe working with some other readers and going further and work with, Jose, who's, perhaps doing work that's far beyond the other students and give him the material that he needs to continue to strive. And that's hard work. And when we just, isolate teachers, that's not going to allow them to talk to other teachers, to talk to other professionals about how they can improve.
Dr. Cook, is it possible that efforts to assess teacher performance are standing in the way of teacher performance?
It's possible, and I understand your question. I think, we've been very deliberately taking time to try to make sure our administrators, for example, understand what good instruction looks like and can support their teachers in doing that. This summer, we've had a lot of training going on of each and every administrator who would be evaluating teachers, and we're doing that on a time frame that was laid out by our unions and school management folks to make sure that it made sense. But you certainly want folks who can do a quality job observing you and the instruction you're offering. And I agree with the comments that were made here. When I was teaching, I had to take vacation in order to watch someone else teach or have someone come in and watch me. It never happens. And you don't want to be working in isolation. It is very hard to teach and teach well. You want someone to be watching you. You need to look at other people doing it well and to get ideas. And it's a complex activity and something that requires a lot of support and time of teachers in the profession.
What about the concerns over teaching to the test? This concept that with multiple standardized tests to prepare for, you need to focus your curriculum on preparing students for that particular exam, those particular facts, and then that might create an environment where those students feel less engaged because they're always just kind of chugging away practicing for the next test.
It's certainly a concern and something that we've heard about. It's one of the byproducts, I think, of No Child Left Behind that came through that was negative, as is looking at school districts and saying you're doing a bad job solely based on this score, when in fact some of these schools have been improving and showing gains. And we need to give them credit for that.
This is Focus. I'm Craig Cohen, and today we're considering a somewhat provocative question. Is school too easy? Recent surveys of students conducted by the Department of Education indicate that some students don't feel challenged by some of the curriculum that they are taught. I mentioned these numbers earlier, but I think they're worth repeating. 37% of fourth graders say their math work is often or always too easy. 57% of eighth graders say their history work is often or always too easy. 39% of 12th graders say they rarely write about what they read in class. These findings are highlighted in a report co-authored by one of our guests, Ulrich Boser. He's a senior fellow with the Center for American Progress. Also with us here in studio is Illinois State Superintendent of Education, Dr. Christopher Cook. We welcome your questions and comments for our guests this morning at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. Or you can email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. That phone number again is 333-WILL or toll-free 800-222-9455. WILL. We also welcome your questions on WILL's Facebook page, and we have one such question from Sandra, who asks, how are charter schools different from private schools, and how can they be good for our state when they are draining money from private schools, or from public schools, rather? Dr. Cook?
Sure. Well, charter schools are public schools, so many of them in Illinois are run by districts. We have just a couple that are authorized by the state, and we now have a state charter commission that can authorize charters. And they don't have to adhere to a lot of the state laws and regulations that other districts do. They still do have to perform and be held accountable for performance, and they have to be abiding by, of course, all federal laws that are in place for schools. So that, in essence, is how they're different. And, you know, they offer options for parents, and we've seen charters emerge. We, of course, have the most charters in Chicago public schools. We are seeing some interest in charters elsewhere in the state. But the financial drain on the district is certainly something that's always considered when charters come into play, and is certainly a serious issue to be to contend with as they're starting.
And we have a question from Kim, who asks, when we say high-performing student, who are we talking about? She goes on to say, some schools are experimenting with providing rigorous learning activities for those who might otherwise drop out. This flips conventional wisdom on its head. Can you speak to that and to the fact of potentially at-risk students and potential dropouts rising to the challenge?
Well, certainly we have a number of alternative schools in the state that offer an alternative curriculum, even for students who were at risk of dropping out. And a student that's not challenged will often disengage and be at higher risk of dropping out. So a high-performing student is one certainly that I would look at in not being deficient in any of the core learning areas and are able to apply content and knowledge.
Ulrich, any thoughts on what Dr. Cook's saying?
Would just add to the idea of engaging students, and that for many high school students, it could be the basketball team that brings them to school each day. And we need to make sure that it's a fully rounded, well-rounded experience for the students, because what keeps students going to school might not always be math class. It might be some other extracurriculars. And to make sure that we keep a holistic picture in mind when we're thinking about ways that we can make sure that students who are thinking about dropping out or just generally disconnected, ways to make sure that we engage them broadly in the process of schooling.
Let's take a couple of calls. We have Ken on the line from Joliet. Good morning, Ken.
How are you today?
Well, how are you?
Fine. I went to school in the 60s, high school in the 60s, and the first 2 years were at St. Vincent de Paul Seminary in Lamont, and it was really, you lived there. It was a real prep school atmosphere, and you had study halls at night, and the Vincentians are a teaching order. They run DePaul University in Chicago, so, you know, they were very vigorous in their education. And I remember in sophomore year we took European history, and they used the same book for European history that they used at DePaul University, and we'd read a 30, 40-page chapter every night in study hall and test on it the next day. Well, when I was 16, I went through puberty and decided I didn't want to be a priest, so I left the seminary and went to a Catholic high school in New Lenox, and that was taught by Sisters of Providence and the Christian Brothers, and I was a junior, so my class had already had, they were in the process, that it was a co-institutional that was going co-ed, so some of the kids had taken, the girls had already taken.
Ken, I'm just going to jump in here, because I think I kind of get the sense of what you're getting at, that you had, by switching from one school to another, from one experience to another, suddenly the curriculum had changed, kind of, and circumstances changed, right?
What happened was, you know, we had a test, you know, 3 weeks into my American history class, we had a test. And it was, one chapter, and we go in there, and the sister says it was, okay, it's, it's an open book test. I mean, I had read that book studied that chapter like I studied it when I was in the seminary. I finished that test in 5 minutes, and I didn't open the book. And one of the questions was, whose picture's on page 20? And I knew whose picture was on page 20.
Okay. You know? I get the point, and thank you very much for the call and your comment. He raises a good point, Dr. Cook, that the educational experience in one school can be vastly different from another school. And certainly, you know, there's endless debate about who should really dictate curriculum. Should it be determined state to state? Should it be determined district to district? Should how much say should parents in individual districts have? And we keep trying to find ways to have some baseline where we say, well, at least everybody gets this baseline education. In doing so, though, do we potentially pull down the quality of some schools in the interest of raising others up?
Well, it's an important debate, I think, particularly in Illinois, where we have 869 local governing units, which is high for any state in the country. So it's important to the for the state, for example, if you're comparing high schools, for us to know, are the course offerings even comparable? So as a parent, you know that the experience that you're having, and I went to a public high school here in Illinois, it was a unit district in a rural part of the state. How does that experience compare to others? So we have now high school feedback reports. For the first time, we're collecting and comparing courses that are offered in high school. And we want to make some of those determinations public as soon as possible so that parents can start to be better consumers and to be able to go in and have conversations with this local administration and the local boards to say, gee, you know, we don't have 4 years of math and we're not offering, you know, higher levels of math in high school. Should we be? And are we doing the same with science? Those are important questions, I think, for the public to know and for the public to be able to compare. And I do think it makes a difference in the success of students who then leave those environments to go elsewhere. That's separate from – so there's no state curriculum in Illinois. We offer and have requirements for certain courses. But, you know, I think it is important to be comparing these things and to be asking, you know, how well then are they taught is yet another question, and by whom.
Ulrich, the caller's point also plays back into student surveys that you were examining in your report insofar as he saw an experience when he was in school where by shifting from one environment to another, a particular subject that he was passionate about, he was finding the curriculum was you know, pretty basic and maybe a little bit too basic and not challenging enough. If it were more challenging curriculum in every district, in every subject, in every case, while that there's always that potential it could leave some kids behind, and that's, I think, where the whole concept of No Child Left Behind comes from, is there also a concern that if you don't have that kind of really vibrant engagement on certain subjects, that there might be students out there who would be engaged on those subjects and would exhibit more academic success if they really were challenged more?
I think if we challenge students more, we would see more academic success. There's really little doubt in my mind that that is true. And if in the past we had allowed all sorts of schools and districts to really do their own thing, and in this modern economy, it simply does not make sense that students who graduate from around Illinois shouldn't have the same basic math skills as students who graduate from Kentucky. It's also important to keep in mind that most students are not reading at grade level in fourth grade. Most eighth graders are not performing at grade level. We have a dropout rate that hovers around 70%. We need to ratchet up our standards. Illinois is one of 40 states that have joined this Common Core Standards movement. This is an effort to raise academic standards in reading and math, and the standards are focused on the latest in what we know about how students learn, about the cognitive psychology of learning, and they give some very clear and precise expectations of what students know and should be able to do. And I think that's going to help all students rise and be prepared for the global economy. And I think it's also going to be very helpful for our top students, because teachers will be able to focus more on the craft of teaching. How do they deliver that information in a way that really pulls students in? And so we don't have these questions like your caller mentioned, you know, what was the picture on page 20, but more of the skills that we need to be prepared for the modern workforce, thinking critically about material, having a broad base of knowledge to engage in a discipline.
We're talking with Dr. Christopher Cook, Illinois State Superintendent of Education, and Ulrich Boser, Senior Fellow with the Center for American Progress and co-author of a report which suggests for some students, school may be too easy. We're discussing that report, the surveys at the heart of it, and its potential implications for education in Illinois, as well as the rest of the country. And we welcome you to the conversation. We hope you'll call us this morning at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. Let us know what you think. Do you think school today is too easy? How does it compare to education from 20, 30 years ago? We'll get into that in the coming minutes. We also welcome your emails at will-talk@illinois.edu. The phone number again, 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. More of your phone calls and emails after a short break. This is Focus.
4 years ago in Denver, Democrats nominated Barack Obama for president.
With profound gratitude and great humility, I accept your nomination for presidency of the United States.
This week, President Obama addresses the Democratic Convention in Charlotte. I'm Mara Liasson. Join us for special coverage from NPR News.
Coverage starts tonight at 7.
Support for WILL comes from World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods on the corner of 6th and University in Champaign, providing Champaign-Urbana with an international selection of chocolates, cheeses, oils, balsamic vinegar, jams, spices, barbecue sauces, and more. World Harvest invites you to join them in supporting public radio.
You're listening to Focus on WILL AM 580. I'm Craig Cohen. Thanks for joining us this morning. As I mentioned, we are talking about education and whether school today is too easy. There's a new report out that a recent report indicating, based off of student surveys, that maybe that's the case. And when it comes to some grades, some subjects, some students, there's a sense that maybe school is too easy. We're welcoming your questions and comments this morning at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. We'll go next to caller in Champaign. Good morning. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Yes, go ahead.
And I'm pleased to hear that the show is back on the air and so on. I'm a professor at the university, and one thing that always surprises me, I study Japan. What's interesting is if you take the case of Japan, you have roughly 97 percentile graduation rates. To graduate from high school, you have to know roughly 2,135 characters. You have to know, you go beyond calculus. I forget the exact level of math. It's well known that in Japan, South Korea, and Taiwan, that if you get a high school degree, typically you've gone through roughly the equivalent of 2 years of college in the United States. So when you come over here, other than having problems with English, you're in a very advantageous position. And I compare that to my own background. I'm from Ohio. I graduated around 1980. And we had French and German in our school, French and Spanish. We didn't even have German. But I was talking with a French professor recently who told me that most schools in Illinois no longer have French. They no longer even have French. They only have Spanish. We're going in the wrong direction. The only comparison I have in this country is my graduate school days at Princeton. And I can tell you those students were fantastic. Why? Because most of them had gone to prep schools. And I realized at a certain point that our society functions as a class society. We have less social mobility than Japan or most of Europe for about 10 years now. Until we ask our students to live up to real standards, working with teacher unions and everyone to improve the school system more broadly, the public school system, we're going to increasingly see terrible, terrible problems society-wide, not simply at the level of education. And so I just wanted to say that and get your feedback.
All right. Thanks very much for the call. Any thoughts?
Yeah. I mean, I think the caller raises some very important points. And we tend to look at an additional language acquisition as you know, not necessarily a positive or asset in this country. And it's incredibly important to be able to, you know, communicate well anywhere in the world, and to give, again, higher order skills to students. And, you know, our math and our language arts standards are internationally benchmarked with the Common Core for a reason, because we're thinking about what other nations are doing and how they're approaching those same subjects. And that's why we were quick to adopt those and to work towards now assessments aligned to those. But I think there's also the aspect of things that you can't necessarily easily measure that are still important. Creativity, for example.
Well, and that gets back to the question that the caller raised, which is, if you put so much energy and resources into raising test scores or rankings with other countries, can it be to the detriment of course options, opportunities, things, particular subjects that might engage a student who might not otherwise be so academically inclined, but suddenly become so because they're engaged in what they're doing?
It's an important question. But remember, a lot of our seniors don't necessarily take a full course load in their senior year. There's a lot of study halls still that are enrolled, you know, for a number of high school students. And that's why I think it's important to be comparing these schools to one another over time to see what exactly is being offered.
Ulrich, do you think it's an either-or proposition, or can there be a way that the sorts of what we might characterize as electives can be a way to bring in students that might not otherwise feel engaged in academics and become more so in the more standard coursework that we spend a lot of time focusing on in terms of test scores?
I don't think it's an either-or. I think making sure that students are engaged is going to require electives, whether it's music or foreign language or, just a good gym class. We need to make sure that that's a part of what students get. I think the other important aspect that the caller raised are the stakes here, and I think education is very important to social mobility, and that we need to make sure that we keep that in mind when we're thinking about raising the standards for all students and making sure that they're prepared for college. Students who don't go to college and don't graduate from college earn much less money. They're, you know, have a much harder time getting jobs, and we need to make sure that we can offer robust educational opportunities to all students. Our society, of course, is quite different than Japan's. We have a much more diverse society and some more significant challenges in many ways, but by no means does that mean that we can't teach all students. And we've seen a lot of schools compete at the highest levels when they really focus on the delivery of education. High poverty schools can compete and teach students to these higher levels. And so we need to figure out what is the best way to do that, have more innovation within the system, experiment with newer ways, but make sure that at the end of the day, what matters is student performance.
Let's go next to Damon in Charleston. Good morning.
Hi, thank you.
Sure.
I've been a teacher for a while, and it feels like lose sight of Lev Vygotsky, the idea that you don't just teach to a brain, but there's the social element. And from what you were talking earlier, in order to really challenge students, you have to treat them as individuals, learn what kind of strengths and weaknesses they have. And the commercialization, and more specifically in terms of policy, this No Child Left Behind, they really disable schools from getting it to students as individuals. And there are just not enough teachers on the ground to accommodate true learning.
Okay. Thanks very much for the comment. Dr. Cook, what do you think?
Well, of course, my training as a special educator is around individualizing instruction. I think it's incredibly important for every student. Every teacher, to some extent now, has to be able to accommodate and modify curriculum in order to reach students. And, I think the social element to school, we've talked about a bit, it is incredibly important, and it needs to be balanced. Most other nations looking at us would question our vigorous attention to sports. Not that they're not important, but physical fitness in general is, and there's other ways to get it. We have parents who select schools based on whether their students can, you know, be on the team. There needs to be more thought put in to that, and having an honest conversation, I think, around balance of how the entire social network of school works for students.
Ulrich?
What I would add to that is that we have been really hidebound in our approach to education. We have had the same education system really since the 1930s, and it's this factory model that's focused on inputs, and we need to think more about outputs. For a very long time, we've just been focused on, one teacher to 22 to 23 students. There's no reason why some students can't go with a really high-performing teacher in one room, while other students are maybe practicing some of the basic factual material that they need on computers. And thinking about different ways to distribute education, there's also no reason why the test needs to be at the end of the year. I mean, if students have mastered a material, they should be able to go on to the next course or to the next level, and focus simply on seat time doesn't allow students to do that. So I think we have a different society than we did in the 1930s. We're focused on what students should know and be able to do, and we need to change our education system so it's more flexible, both in the ways that the school day is structured and how education is actually delivered to students.
We have an email from Jim that in some ways reflects what you're saying. He says each student needs to be allowed to reach their maximum potential, but the past and current system sort of aims at a middle ground because of the wide disparity in each student's interests and ability. He says with the advent of new tools and options, we need to accelerate letting the student work at his highest level in each subject and not worry about everyone learning the same thing at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. And my earlier comment about Carnegie units, I mean, they largely dictate how schools are structured. We need to move away from those. Some states are starting to do that. New Hampshire is one example. And I think that makes a lot of sense. If we're truly teaching to the standard when students reach them, they should be able to progress to the next level and support them in that way.
David is in Urbana. Good morning, David.
It seems to me there's a problem in evaluating particularly Illinois schools, where we have some schools that spend upwards of $40,000 per student annually and others that spend substantially less than $10,000. And trying to speak of schools as a whole, it seems to me, isn't very useful with such disparities.
Okay. Thanks very much for the comment. And there's another fair point. The resources are different from one district to the next, are they not?
They're not only different, they're decreasing. So in the last 3 years, we've seen over $800 million away from education, and we have a formula for the distribution of those so that some of the poorer schools can get more money from the state. But in fact, the caller's raising an incredibly legitimate point. We have districts that spend a lot more money per pupil, thus are attracting higher quality personnel often to their districts. The state has to intervene in some of the lower performing districts, and there we find, a number of deficits as compared to other districts. And this is very important issue, I think, that we have to keep talking about and trying to remedy in talking about our funding for the state.
So go ahead, Elric.
I was just going to add that Illinois actually has one of the most inequitable funding schemes in the United States. We see large gaps between the dollars that are available for students from low-income background versus students from high-income background. And it's not only across districts, it's within districts themselves. Illinois, of course, has some very large districts, and within those districts we see wealthier schools getting more money. What we need to do is make sure that students from disadvantaged backgrounds get a fair shot. And more than that, by doing that, we need to make sure that they get an equal shot at dollars and get some more funds to make sure that they can reach these standards. And I think we can have these conversations at the same time, that we should move forward on the making our education funding systems more equitable and more productive and efficient, at the same time focusing on raising the standards for students.
We have a question via email from Molly who asks, what, if anything, are we learning from charter schools? Are there best practices that can be replicated broadly?
It's a very good question. And, we haven't, I think, studied charter schools enough. You'll see pro and con studies come out about charters in terms of what's working. But truly, the kinds of things that work in charters, I think, work in other schools. Good leadership, good instruction, supporting teachers and administrators, involvement from the community and parents, all of that matters to a favorable outcome for students in schools, regardless of what type it is.
What about vouchers, voucher systems? Do they serve or denigrate public education?
Well, certainly anytime you're taking away, you know, students and putting them in other settings, in private settings, it's going to be something that is a concern to a number of folks. We've had a couple charter bill or voucher bills, rather, that have come up in the General Assembly and have not passed. And oftentimes things don't pass in the General Assembly because there's winners and losers perceived. And, you know, we're supportive of public education. We think public education should be strong and it's best. But we do have to address our lowest performers. And some of these systemic issues that some of the callers are talking about, such as funding, in order to right the ship. It's not fair or right that a student, even for a year, would be sitting in an inadequate situation and not getting an equal opportunity for education. I mean, that certainly should not be allowed.
Is the state of Illinois paying close attention to what's happening in Indiana in regards to vouchers, as well as charter schools and other?
We do. We pay attention. I work closely with my counterparts across the country through our national organization. We follow legislation in a number of ways in other states. And, of course, there are hundreds of education bills that come up every session in Illinois. And we spend a fair amount of time analyzing those and trying to come to good outcomes.
Let's see if we can't get in one or two more calls. We'll go next to Bob in Geneva. Bob, good morning.
Hey, good morning. Yeah, you know, this is kind of a sore subject in my point. I've lived in different states, and this has got to be one of the worst states when it comes to education I've ever been in. One of the reasons I say that is you're talking funding. You leave it on the taxpayer's pocketbook to take care of the situation. And I don't think that's right, to be honest with you. I think, you know, the bulk of the money, and I have done research on this, and I know several teachers, and they'll fight this tooth and nail, is that 99% of the money that you give goes to the teachers, goes to the unions, and it doesn't come out one iota for the kids unless it's an extreme case. The other thing is, it seems to me a big chunk of our real estate taxes that we have, you know, the amount of money is just unreasonable, and you're not getting any different education. Now, I know several people, including myself, I sent my kids to schools that were private, and they got better education than they did in a public school. But yet the public school has to have this funding every year. There always has to be a referendum. There isn't, you know, a happy medium. And I'm looking at Chicago schools. I'm looking at St. Louis schools. All the inner city schools seem to want to strike every year, and it doesn't improve anything.
Okay. I think we get the basic concept of your point, and I do thank you for your comment. I want to give Dr. Cook a chance to respond to it.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's something that we hear, you know, quite a bit. The majority of education funding does indeed go towards personnel. It's to hire teachers, administrators, and folks to work with students. And I think that's true in most places, that we're hiring people here to work with a number of kids in the state. And again, there's a lot of variance. So the community the individual's talking about, we have a number of counties that have caps, tax caps, where the state makes up the difference through the funding formula. And I think all that has to be remedied. We also have a situation in Illinois, which is no surprise, I'm sure, to any listeners, where we haven't been paying bills on time. So the majority of our local districts actually don't know how much money they're going to have in any given school year. And this requires a lot of turnover of personnel. So they'll have to do proactive layoffs until they get a final budget and then hire back. Highly disruptive to a good educational system.
Ulrich, we only have a couple of minutes left. Do we have enough student survey information to really draw effective conclusions about public education policy in America from them?
I think that we don't. I think we could do a lot more in this regard. Illinois has been taking some important steps forward within this, but doing more student surveys, doing them regularly, benchmarking them against other high-performing schools and states and nations is something that we really need to focus on. This is a valuable source of information. It helps teachers improve their craft. It helps parents and taxpayers figure out what's happening in schools. And as to your college point, we need to know better about what schools are doing for their money. And I think once people realize that, you know, money makes a difference, that schools are using their tax dollars effectively, and that students are coming out of schools prepared to these higher standards, we're going to see a more willingness to engage and perhaps raise taxes or continue to fund the system better.
Dr. Kirk, we're almost out of time, but I could imagine somebody listening to this whole discussion thinking to themselves, who cares what students think? Who cares about these surveys? They're there to learn. And when I was in school, I did my times tables and nobody asked me how I felt about the educational experience. How do you respond to that?
Well, again, I think it's a data point we need to look at and think about in addition to many others. And much of our assessment is really in its infancy. A lot of our assessments, the ones the federal government are paying for, we're spending hundreds of millions of dollars at the federal level to try to determine how better to assess student learning, and it's going to keep developing over time. But I think it's an important survey, one that we need to take into consideration. I'm interested in the data and intend to be collecting similar data here in the future.
Dr. Christopher Cook is Illinois State Superintendent of Education. Superintendent Cook, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
And Ulrich Boser is a senior fellow from the Center for American Progress and a co-author of the report we've been discussing this hour. Ulrich, thank you very much for talking with us as well.
Great. Thank you.
The conversation continues on our website at will.illinois.edu/focus. To find today's program post, visit our homepage. That's will.illinois.edu. You can find Focus under the program's drop-down menu. Just move your cursor over WILL-AM-FM and then click on Focus. Again, that's all at will.illinois.edu. A reminder, starting Friday, you'll have a second chance to hear this program weeknights at 8 on WILL AM 580. And if you know anyone who might enjoy hearing Focus who lives outside of our listening area, let them know we stream the program live every day at will.illinois.edu, where you can also listen back to past programs. Focus is also available as a free downloadable podcast. To sign up, visit the Focus page of our website. On tomorrow's show, perhaps no single issue has been more politicized the last 4 years than health care. After more than a year of especially rancorous debate and discussion in Congress and in town halls, this country's healthcare system began an overhaul in 2010 through passage of the Affordable Care Act. That law has set a number of changes in motion, not the least of which is a requirement for most Americans to have health insurance. The Affordable Care Act has also addressed everything from providing relief to seniors who faced a Medicare prescription drug donut hole to providing Americans under 26 with a chance to remain on their parents' health insurance. We thought it would be helpful to provide an hour in which we walk through what is and is not in that legislation, what is and is not already in place, and what it all means for your personal health care. We'll try to take the politics out of it. Don't laugh. We're going to try. That's on Focus tomorrow.